Today's Teisho will be on Case 13 in the Book of Serenity. Case 13 is entitled, Lin Ji's Blind Ass. Introduction. Devoted entirely to helping others, you don't know there is self. You should exert the law to the fullest without concern that there be no people. For this, it is necessary to have the ruthless ability to snap a wooden pillar in two. When about to go, what then? Case. When Lin Ji was about to die, he admonished San Sheng, after I pass on, don't destroy my treasury of the Eye of Truth. San Sheng said, how dare I destroy the teacher's treasury of the Eye of Truth? Lin Ji said, if someone suddenly questions you about it, how will you reply? San Sheng immediately shouted. Lin Ji said, who would have known that my treasury of the Eye of Truth would perish in this blind ass? Verse. The robe of faith is imparted at midnight to Wei Neng, stirring up the 700 monks at Wang Mei. The Eye of Truth of the branch of Lin Ji, the blind ass destroying it, gets the hatred of others. Mind to mind, they seal each other. Ancestor to ancestor, they pass on the lamp, leveling oceans and mountains, magically producing a phoenix. Just the name and word is hard to compare. In some, the method is knowing how to fly. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming to Sesshin and doing such a wonderful job this morning. It's not easy doing 9 or 10 hours of zazen every day. Depends on whether you count sutra recitation and dokusan. But it adds up to something like between 8 and 10 hours of sitting. And or at least it can if you sometimes sit during the the shower period or the period after dinner, and that's a lot of zazen. It's only natural that on the second day of a sesshin like this, people's legs would hurt and their backs would be tired. Also, some of you are here for the first time, and first 7 day sit, I should say. And you may be feeling a little bit intimidated. You know, if you've successfully come to several earlier 5 day sesshin, you know you can handle it. So coming to sesshin for 7 days took a certain amount of courage. And it's possible right now you're wondering why you made that decision. So some of you knew what you were getting into, and some of you didn't. But for everybody, day two of the morning number two of sesshin is challenging, you know, or it can be. So I appreciate everybody's excellent effort this morning. And you all know that there's a way to deal with all of this, and it just takes a little patience, but I'm sure you'll be able to handle it. You know, in this story, we have an encounter between Rinzai, Master Rinzai, Lin Ji, and his student, his main student, Song Sheng. And Lin Ji is on his deathbed in this koan. His student is with him at his deathbed, and Linji says to him, "After I pass on, after I die, please don't destroy my treasury of the eye of truth." So he's saying, you know, in his time, Linji was widely admired as a very great Zen master. And after his death, his lineage became really the most important Zen lineage in China. It's interesting that Zhaozhou's lineage died out after not too long. And there were some other great Zen masters whose lineages also didn't persist. But Linji was, his lineage was quite successful. And by the time of the Communist Revolution in China, almost every temple in China considered itself a Linji temple. Now, it's very different in Japan, where the Zaotong Soto is a major Zen school, and the Rinzai is rather smaller. But in China, it was the other way around. Zaotong was very minor house, and Rinzai's house was very big. And so at this moment, Rinzai is probably about to die, and he calls Sun Shengyan, and he says, "Now look, don't let my treasury of awakening pass away. Don't let it go. Don't slip up. Don't let it get lost." And San Sheng says, "Well, how I would never dream of allowing your treasury of enlightenment, of Zen, to be lost." And so Linji seems to be still worried about it. So he says, "If someone questions you about it, okay, great. But I want to make sure you understand. If someone questions you about it, what will you say? And if somebody says, 'What is Zen about?' What will you say?" San Sheng said, "Hatsu." So he gave a shout. And then Linji, he thinks, "Oh crap." Linji said, "Oh, who would have known that my treasury of the eye of truth would perish in this blind ass?" It's like, oh no, you're blind ass, you're going to lose it all. So that's sort of what this koan seems to be saying. I've always wondered why, Joshu was so great. Joshu is like my personal favorite among the great Zen masters. Wang Bo, I also loved quite a bit. But Joshu is the one I admire the most, and his style is very different from Linji's style. You know, Linji was actually a very confrontational person. So his style was be very, I don't know how to put it, very confrontational. So if he thought maybe you were evading, he'd come at you with another question. Or if he thought you were living in a dream, if you came in and said something that he thought was you came into Dokusan and you said something he thought was, baloney. He might just slap you. So he was a very confrontational person, and made people nervous, I think. Joshu is like really easygoing. Joshu was had many Kensho experiences, and very generous, always direct, very clear in what he said. You know, some Zen teachers hide what they say in hide what they mean in language which is confusing or you know, very obscure. But you know, Joshua was very direct, very simple, very straightforward, you know, very unpretentious. And you know, different teachers had different styles. It's always interesting to me that Joshu's school died out and that Linji's school became so prevalent, you know. Maybe there was something, you might think, well, maybe there was something wrong with Joshu's Zen, you know, or something special about Linji's Zen. After all, you know, Linji's lineage was successful, whereas Joshu's lineage, you know, died out, so we could say unsuccessful. What was wrong with Joshu's lineage? You know, what was right about Linji's lineage? Why did Linji's lineage triumph? You know, and when we get to Japan, you know, we look at it was the Soto school that became the most important, and Linji's Zen became very minor affair in Japan. Why? Why was that? You know, when we think about events, we imagine that there's a kind of principle of fairness or justice to events, you know. So actually, you know, if we see that Linji's Zen triumphs and Joshu's Zen dies out, you know, what we want to say is that this is for some reason, you know, this was for some reason. There was something about Linji's Zen which justified it. And there's something about Joshu's Zen which didn't justify survival. You know, it's like a defect or a mistake. I think people like to think this way. You know, it's very, believe it or not, it's actually reassuring. You know, it's reassuring to think that, you know, if I live a careful life. I'll have a happy and successful life. You know, that's really how we want to think. You know, so it's like if I do a good job, you know, I'll be promoted. You know, if I do a good job, I'll be promoted. If I try hard, I'll be successful. These are all kinds of stories we tell ourselves. When I was starting graduate school, I was so scared of graduate school, you know. And I used to actually, it just seemed impossible to me that I could ever get through graduate school. It just seemed very difficult, and it took 7 years, which was longer than I had ever done anything in my life. I had gone through 4 years of undergraduate school, but then to turn around and do 7 more years, you know, I started graduate school I think when I was about 23, so 7 years was a third of my life. It seemed like an eternity. And I wanted to be successful, and I worked like the devil. You know, when I got into graduate school, I worked so hard because I wanted to be successful. I wanted to get that PhD. And I used to tell myself, if I work hard, it will happen. You know, if I work hard, it will happen. Now, you know, this is true in a certain sense. You know, if you work hard, things will happen. And if you're successful, it must be because of something you did. There's a certain truth to that. But you know, actually, much of that is not true. This is kind of disturbing to think about, but you know, I have known people who were really very good and hard-working people who haven't been particularly successful at what they have chosen to do. And it's not for lack of talent, you know. I have talked about the fact before that I've known a number of people who are, I consider to be, really great artists. Really great artists. And nobody's ever heard their name. When Georgia O'Keeffe was quite old, you might know that Georgia O'Keeffe is one of the most highly regarded painters in the 20th century. Somebody said, "How does it feel to be the greatest painter of your time?" And she laughed. She said, "You know, I'm not the greatest painter. You don't even know the greatest painter. I've met painters who are much better than I am, but they never got written up in the art magazines, you know." She said, "I'm just the most famous painter because somebody got interested in my work, but I'm not the greatest painter." And as I say, I know people who are really great painters and they'll never be in the art books, you know. And that's interesting, isn't it? It's like, you know, basically we want to say, if you try, you'll be successful. And if you're not successful, there must have been something wrong, right? And this is a very human way to think, because it helps us to deal with the uncertainties of life. So when I was starting out graduate school, it helped me very much to think that if I was just very disciplined and I just tried very hard, I would be successful. You know, I would get the PhD. And so, as a result of this, I worked constantly. You know, the only thing I did other than go to graduate school was Zen after a while, because going to graduate school drove me crazy and I needed Zen even more than ever. But I would come home and from school, and if I didn't have papers to grade, I'd be reading away, I'd be in the library. And if I had to write a paper, I would start weeks before it was due. And I used to, have heard there's a machine called a typewriter. Before there were computers, it was a primitive instrument, and you had keys, like a modern keyboard, you know. But when you pressed them, there was nothing electronic, you know. Nothing happened if you didn't make the keys go down. You had to hit them with your fingers, with your muscle power in your hand. And the little hammers would go up and hit ribbon and click, 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 and type. There was a ribbon with ink in it. This is all very primitive, you know. Anyway, I'd be typing my papers and hear this. See, you don't know what now keyboards are silent. But in the old days, if you had a typewriter, if you could hear somebody typing, because you could hear this clack, 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 you know. So it would be snap, 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 click, 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 click. Little tiny impacts, you know. And you could hear so my roommate was also in graduate school upstairs, but he wasn't as driven as I was to succeed. His name is Larry Stone. And Larry would get freaked out because he'd hear me. His apartment didn't have very good insulation, and he could hear my typewriter. And sometimes I'd meet him and he'd go, "Are you working again?" And he'd look so worried. You know, and I'd be ta 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 ta. You know. And I just thought, if I work hard enough on these papers, I'll get my PhD, you know. So you know, we think that basically if we are careful enough, we can control our lives as we move into the future. Yeah. And we might feel that way about many things. But the interesting fact is that your life is very unlikely to turn out as you imagined it, or even as you intended it. Isn't that interesting? It's very unlikely to be the case. And the truth is, and this is a very difficult thing to know, but you could try very, you could be very intelligent, you could try very hard, and you might not succeed. And isn't that interesting? You know, when I was just starting out at Rutgers, I met a professor named Tom Van Lan. And Tom Van Lan had written two books, and he was working on a third book. And he let me read some chapters of the book, and it was just a brilliant book. And he never finished that book because really, the presses he wrote to weren't interested in publishing it, even though it was this, I thought, this really brilliant book. And other people I know thought it was brilliant too, but it had kind of gone out of style. It would be like being a painter in an impressionist style when nobody wants to paint that way anymore. Tom had written this really beautiful book, and nobody wanted to publish it because it was sort of like the old style. So these things happen all the time, and it might shake our faith in life, you know, because we want to believe that if Lin Ji's lineage survived, it was because Lin Ji did something special. And if Joshu's lineage didn't survive, it must be because Joshu had some problem. Now, you might not care about whether a Zen lineage is survived or not, but you might care about whether you answer your koan. Yeah? And you might care about other aspects of your life too, right? You know, if I'm just careful enough and I try hard enough, I'll get to my objective. But as I say, you know, if you look at life, it's very rarely the case that you wind up where you thought you were going to wind up. I was just reading an article the other day about a man who was struggling with unemployment. And believe it or not, he had gone to medical school and gotten a medical degree. But then when he started practicing medicine, he realized he didn't really want to be a doctor. He wanted to be a journalist, a medical journalist. So he started to write medical journalism, and then he got picked up by a local television station. So he was like a local Sanjay Gupta, you know, the guy on who does medical broadcasting. He was like this local health journalist on television. But the television station is downsizing, and they laid him off. And then he thought, well, I'll go back and practice medicine. But believe it or not, they said, you have to take all your tests again because it's been 8 years since you practiced medicine. So he can't practice medicine. He can't get his license back. So he has to go and take some medical boards again. Now, I'm not trying to discourage you. I'm not trying to discourage you about anything that you're doing, including Zen practice. But I just want you to, when you think about Zen practice, and other things too in your life, please consider that gain and loss, right and wrong, such thoughts must finally be abolished at once. Gain and loss, right and wrong, such thoughts must finally be abolished at once. People believe that the outcome justifies the action. So success means you did it right, and failure means you did it wrong. Right? But actually, that's not true. There are some people who are wildly successful who did everything wrong. And there are people who did everything right who become, you know, not very successful. That's interesting, isn't it? I have known people who have written these beautiful books that don't get any attention. And then I meet people who are really not nearly as profound and hardworking, and for some reason they come to everybody's attention and they become big celebrities, right? This is also true, like, even in the movies, you know. Do you really think Brad Pitt is the greatest actor? You know, I don't think so. I think he's very handsome, you know. But I don't think he's really a great actor, you know. If you watch a lot of movies, every once in a while you'll see actors who are just stunningly good. But they're not, they don't get the attention of Brad Pitt, you know. They're just really great. And sometimes people don't even, you might even say, who was that guy? That was so good. Or who was that woman? She did such a beautiful job. You know, why doesn't she get a story in People magazine? You know? So gain and loss, right and wrong, such thoughts must finally be abolished at once. You know, really, you can't control where your life is going. Not in your 65 to 85 years on earth, and not in Sesshin, and in fact not even on any particular sit. It's just a fact. You know, you can sit down and say, okay, I'm going to be really serious. I'm really going to try. And then, you know, into your head comes an array of bizarre, crazy, irrelevant thoughts. Now, you didn't choose those thoughts, right? You actually can't choose the thoughts that arise in your consciousness. They just pop up. So you come in, you sit down on the cushion, and you think, here's what I want to do, and then all of a sudden these thoughts come up. And at the end of 30 minutes, you know, the sit might look nothing like what you expected. And you might say, oh, this is failure. You know, I didn't even get close to what I meant to do, you know. Now sometimes you'll come in and you'll say, I'm really going to do this. And actually you pull it off. You know, sometimes it seems to be the case that you controlled the situation. But I wonder if you might be willing to try something else, you know. And that is just trying to be present. Just trying to be present. And not to worry about outcome. You know, even though we worry very much about outcomes, we can't control them. And the truth is, we worry and worry and worry, and yet, you know, most of what we worry about is just going to work itself out, or not. And we imagine, you know, okay, in 20 years this is what I want to have happen, and then, you know, basically 20 years later you don't even remember the dreams you used to have. You know, things have changed so much. I think that all we ever really have is this moment. You know, is this moment. And we don't get to choose the moment. We don't. It's sort of like thrust upon us, you know. You're in the moment, and it just arrived on the scene, and you have to choose. You do have the opportunity to choose how you're going to be in that moment, you know? And it might not be the moment you wanted. In fact, it probably isn't the moment you wanted. But when you're in that moment, you have the opportunity to choose how you're going to be with it, you know, with it. You know, the way I try to be in the moment is by going into deep mushin. And so I go into deep mushin, and then I try to be one with the moment, whatever it is. You know, deep mushin, and then be one with the moment. And it's not always easy to be one with the moment, right? Because it might not be the moment we wanted. or the moment we expected, or the moment we felt we deserved, right? Isn't this true? So I mean, maybe you're expecting the next sit to be a really good one, and you sit down on the cushion and it's like, oh, my knee. You know? And maybe you feel that this is unfair. You know, this is a very typical human response. It's like, this is unfair. And then people usually get mad. It's like, or feel self-pity, or, you know, it's like, this is not the moment I wanted. I don't deserve this. You know, this is not fair. I don't deserve this. And then there's usually like outrage or anger. That's very typical. Or, you know, as the moment unfolds in a way we don't like, we could feel fear. Now, that's very typical human. Another one is, believe it or not, shame. You know, people can be ashamed when things aren't going the way they planned because they feel they failed, like loss of control. You know, my father-in-law is 90 years old, and he has problems with his digestive system. And if we go out to a restaurant, we have to give him 2 Lomotil tablets. That's a traveler's diarrhea tablets. And, you know, and then we just have to hope and pray, you know? So when we go on a trip, we always say, now, you know, we've taken him on some trips, and we say, Jack, do you have your stuff? And that means, did you take your Lomotil pills? Yes. And then, you know, Jack doesn't want to wear diapers. See, when you're thinking about how you're going to be in your old age, maybe you think you're going to look like, some movie star, you know? Who was the guy who played Dumbledore? You know, he was very cool. But anyway, my father-in-law is about the same age as the guy who played Dumbledore on the Harry Potter movies, but he's not in good health. And you know, if we go on a trip, he has to take Lomotil so he doesn't have an accident in his pants. Yeah? And we always just, you know, hope, right? It's all going to work out. And the Lomotil usually does the trick, but every once in a while, it doesn't. And then he always carries in his, he has like a little knapsack, and he carries wipes and extra toilet paper and a change of underwear. And he also, this is the truth, and he also carries like a little pair of scissors so he can cut his underwear off. And then he has a plastic bag, and he puts his dirty underwear in his plastic bag, and he wraps it up, and he puts it in the trash, and then he cleans himself up in the bathroom, you know. So I think this is charming, actually, you know. This is what we all have to look forward to. But please don't think that it's a terrible fate. Please don't. It's just life, you know. We went to a restaurant in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, and my father-in-law had an accident in his pants, and I went into the bathroom and I had to help him clean it up, you know. And he didn't quite get on the seat right. So I had to spend some time cleaning up the seat, which was quite a mess. And we went out and had a lovely lunch, you know, actually. But it's not exactly what we planned, you know. The uncontrollability of life is absolutely guaranteed. And when you're in the moment, it might not be the moment you want, right? But it could be a beautiful moment if you inhabit it properly. no matter what it is. You know, now I'm sure my father-in-law is like, you know, ashamed, right, sometimes, because he has to take underwear, handy wipes, you know, all this stuff. Maybe he's ashamed, but, you know, he can't help himself. You know, he can't. It's like an uncontrollable situation, right? But he's actually done a good thing. He's creative about it. He's, you know, he's very careful. So, you know, we can inhabit the moment many different ways. And a lot of Zen practice is learning how to be in the moment in a way that is probably like the optimal way, you know. You can be miserable, you can be unhappy, you can be ashamed, you can be fearful, you can feel injured, like you're the injured, innocent party. But also, it's possible to just be empty, you know, to go to deep mushin and be empty. And then the moment is absolutely beautiful, beautiful, no matter what's happening. And fortunately, life requires us to, you know, struggle in all kinds of ways, and we constantly find ourselves in moments that we don't like. But if you don't think about the outcome is really beyond your control. It really is. The outcome is really beyond your control. And the input is beyond your control too. You don't get to say, you know, none of us got to pick what our IQ would be, you know, how tall we would be, how short we would be. None of us got to pick any of that. None of us got to pick what the temperature was this morning. None of us got to pick whether we were in health or ill, you know, and so on and so on. So you don't get to pick the inputs, and actually you can't control the outcome. Now, for most people, this is like a nightmare, right? It's like a nightmare. Because we spend so much time trying to believe that we deserve what we have, right? Because that means the world is like controllable. And it's okay to, try, right? I mean, it's okay to enroll in a program of study and expect to get a degree. And that's okay. But in a certain sense, we know that we might never get that degree. You know, something might happen, and so it's important to have goals in life. But you have to sort of like have a kind of looseness about things, and that's especially true for Zen practice. You know, if you are trying to control the outcome, then you're creating a lot of tension and a lot of obstacles. And Zen is really not about controlling the outcome. It's really about becoming empty and embracing the moment, whatever it happens to be. Whatever it happens to be. And if you can do that, you know, you're practicing Zen. You know, that's what Zen is all about. Zen isn't about answering koans. We talk about Dai Kensho, right? But Kensho is just emptying out and embracing the moment. And you can do it in a little way, you know, or you can do it in a more wholehearted way. And you could, sometimes people do it in a way that just surprises them and blows the top of their heads off, you know. So there's lots of different ways to practice being in the moment. But that's what Zen is all about. So, gain and loss, right and wrong, such thoughts must finally be abolished at once. Please don't think about anything except emptying yourself out and being in the moment. If you have a koan, empty yourself out and say your koan, and then just see what arises in the moment. And it, generally speaking, what creates obstacles is the desire to control, is either resentment about the situation, right? Or the desire to control the outcome. But generally, those are the things that create a lot of problems in Zen practice. If you don't have resentments about the input, and you're not under the illusion you could control the outcome, it becomes a beautiful journey. You know, beautiful. My father-in-law isn't a deeply awakened person, I would say, although he's a very nice man, very kind person. I think people naturally have moments where they just give up, you know, and they just let go, and they're just in the moment. They have to be, and sometimes they're very happy as a result, you know. Often. So we Zen people do something similar. We sort of chose to be here, so there's a little difference. And you can become very skillful at emptying yourself out and embracing the moment. You can become very skillful just by doing it over and over again. So as you're going through the day today, please remember this. You know, this is not about achieving anything. You can't control the outcome of your actions, really. So don't worry about controlling anything. Just empty, 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 and be in the moment. Empty, 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 empty. Be in the moment. Every moment is a perfect moment. If you do that, it's perfect. Beyond good and bad. So this is such a clever koan, isn't it? When Lin Ji was about to die, he admonished San Sheng. He said, "Whatever you do, you know, don't drop the ball. Don't drop the ball. This is so important. This is, you know, teaching of the Buddha and the ancestors. Don't fail. Whatever you do." The Shan Tseng says, "I wouldn't dream of failing. It's too precious, you see." And then Linji says, okay, but tell me, you know, tell me. What is it? Show me, you know." And the guy says, "Cuts." And then she goes, "Oh, crap." Now it's this blind ass is going to take over. Now remember in Zen, you know, often negative term is a compliment. So if somebody calls you a blind ass in Zen, you should give them a big kiss on their forehead, right? You know, because that's like a big compliment. So he's saying, "You are a blind ass. You're a blind donkey. See, you don't care. You don't worry about success or failure, right or wrong, loss or gain. You know, a blind donkey, that's about as oblivious to outcomes as you can get, right? Also, very trusting, right? A little blind donkey can't take care of itself. You know, has to count on, you know, basically has to count on the universe to survive. And really, if you're a blind donkey, you're living on the kindness of the universe, right? Because you can't do it yourself. May I tell you that we are all living on the kindness of the universe, the infinite kindness of this universe. We're all living like on borrowed time, yeah? And we're all living like, it's like we're all dancing on the edge of the cliff and we don't even see the cliff, you know? Or we're like a blind donkey, right? You know, we couldn't find food without help in a million years, but somehow, you know, we live from day to day. Yeah, so beautiful. When you think about it, we have a lot to be grateful for. So, it's okay to be a blind ass, see? You know, that's the best, really, we're all blind asses if we enter deep mushin, you know, and then we embrace the moment. The robe of faith is imparted at midnight to Wei Neng, stirring up the 700 monks at Wang Mei. The eye of truth of the branch of Lin Ji, the blind ass, destroying it, gets the hatred of others. This is all right now, this is all like false thinking. mind to mind they seal each other, ancestor to ancestor they pass on the lamp. See, this is the Zen transmission, that, you know, teacher to student, teacher to student, teacher to student, precious gems passed on, you know, don't drop it. But you can't drop it. You can't drop it. You can't drop it. The universe can't fail. You know, the universe can't fail. And believe it or not, you can't fail either. Nobody has ever failed, and nobody has ever succeeded. That's the truth. It's a human lie to say there's such a thing as success and failure. Nobody has ever failed, and nobody has ever succeeded. That's the truth. Anyway, in some, the method is knowing how to fly. Yes, that's the truth. So, the way to fly is to make yourself empty, make yourself small, and then embrace the moment, whatever it is. The minute you say yes or no, right or wrong, gain or loss, you're causing yourself unnecessary distress. Yeah. But if you don't think in those terms, if you're just in the moment, every moment is a very beautiful, precious gift. It's like a beautiful, whole universe is taking care of us. So please let the universe take care of you, please.